Greetings, kindred witches. Welcome to this episode of Atomic Witchcraft.
Here, we share our experiences as we build a modern-day inclusive witchcraft practice rooted in nature seasons, celestial cycles, and the science of energy.
Join us as we build a craft that learns from our past, is rooted in our present, and works toward building a better future, all while connecting deeply to the earth and sky around us.
Let us begin a new era of witchcraft. Hi everyone, I'm Ash, an atomic witch walking an eclectic road since the 90s.
I'm Alyssa, about 20 years in and growing a mostly green path.
And I'm Jay, new to the practice, composing a bard witch's craft. Because witch weaves together many webs, past, present, and future, we'd like to acknowledge that we are currently practicing our craft on the lands of the Coast Salish peoples, specifically the Duwamish, Muckleshoot, and Puyallup tribes.
The Atomic team participates in Real Rent, and we encourage you to engage with and contribute to similar programs in your area.
Welcome to our grove, here at the Atomic Hearth. Now, let's get witchy.
Welcome back to the Atomic Hearth. We're days away from the full moon, and I am wrapping up my dive into moss and mushroom magics. In our previous episode, I gave a brief overview of my interest in these aspects of the natural world, how I never really mindfully worked with either, and how this was really going to be just a one-on-one overview for me. This time, I'll chat about the accumulation of this exploration, my hands-on work, and some thoughts for the future. But before we jump in, let's take it back to the basics. This time we'll be chatting about grimoires and spellbooks, what they are, the benefits of keeping one, and if you should do so digitally versus physically.
While today's episode is going to pick up on our discussion around moss and mushrooms, we also wanted to provide space each full moon to address the infamous "where do I begin" question with witchcraft. Now, if you've been practicing a while, don't skip ahead just yet. Consider how revisiting the foundational techniques and questions of our practice can actually provide more context, layers, depth, and space. A bit of a refresh, reaffirmation moment, if you will. So we encourage everyone, no matter how long you've been practicing, to join us in re-exploring the foundations of our craft, especially if you find yourself pressed for time. Returning to the roots can be a great way to stay connected. This lunar cycle, we wanted to talk about a witch's grimoire, spellbook, compendium, or in Wicca, the Book of Shadows. Now, this text is often considered a witch's source of truth. It is where we track the rituals we work with and create layouts that help us live in tune with the lunar tides and solar rhythms. It's where we document the progress of our craft, like recipe books of our particular brand of witch. Now, what you call it is very much up to you. That being said, I personally like to differentiate between my compendium, or book of witch, from my witch's log, or journal. They are companion pieces, but the compendium is meant to be a resource book, while the witch's log, or journal, is really the telling of my personal journey. My compendium holds the final form, while the journal holds the work behind it. Sometimes I use the journal to store that little extra secret sauce ingredient for a recipe, a little legacy that requires both parts. Compendium, Book of Shadows, Spellbook, and Grimoire, what you want to call it is up to you, but please be aware that Book of Shadows is pretty specific to Wicca, and grimoires are often tied to chaos magic and demonology. Personally, I tend toward Witch Compendium, or Witch Tome, or even a Book of Witch, but truly you can find or create terminology here that works best for you. The important part is in the creation. And for me, that's what this is. It's not just creating something for myself, but really the legacy of it all. It helps with things like repeatability and reflection. As a documentation of the journey, it can come in many forms, and these days it might be digitally stored or more tactile, with paper and pen. But then, you know, like, what goes in it? How does one go about putting it all together? Let's crack the cover here and dig in.
One big reason to keep a spellbook, Book of Shadows, grimoire, whatever name takes your fancy, is the ability to, as Ash mentioned, repeat things that you have crafted in your practice, like spells or rituals, especially if you go through multiple iterations of these things. Recording your steps, ingredients, other details, the process, how it felt, the success or lack of, makes it much easier to either repeat said spell or ritual in the future or make adjustments as needed based on your results. As someone who isn't quite as good about recording things as I want to be, I have definitely had more than one moment in my craft where I had to cast my memory back and try tried to remember what words I used, or the timing of the casting, or how well something worked. Don't be me. Make your craft much easier on yourself by jotting these things down. Even if it's just some quick notes on a scrap paper you can then add to your larger overall book. And this doesn't just apply to spells and rituals. Noting down a particular tarot card layout that you really liked, a specific song for meditation that just worked really well, the fact that you really didn't like this one incense scent, or that working with this particular herb gave you a small rash, are really helpful nuggets of information that can help you in your future practice. Now, we do live in a modern era, and thus have access to more tools beyond a pen and paper, including those in the digital sphere. I know many of us, myself included, imagine a great big physical tome when we think of a grimoire, a la The Aunt's One in Practical Magic, or Book in Hocus Pocus.
Yes, that's me.
Me too! But that doesn't mean that's what your own witch book has to look like. In fact, it could be entirely digital. You could have an ongoing document, a digital whiteboard in a program like Miro, Obsidian, or Milanote, not sponsored by any of these, by the way, a private blog, a really personalized Pinterest board, or some combination of these. Heck, you could make a spreadsheet documenting your tarot pulls if that's what makes you happy. The beauty of a digital grimoire is that you can search for keywords and find entries quickly, instead of trying to thumb through pages of a book. It can also allow you to easily visually represent things with photos and art. Now, there are pros and cons to digital versus tactile, just like there are for anything. There's a chance that your computer could crash and you might lose your files, but you could totally just also lose a physical book as well, I guess. There's always the risk that someone could access your private information, whereas no one is hacking a tactile book. I also feel that there's something lost in going fully digital that's hard for me to put my finger on. I personally feel that there's a lot of value in putting hand to paper, like the act of writing itself connects to something deeper. It's why I personally prefer to use a physical schedule book, per se, than a task list, rather than a digital one. Physically penning things in helps me click with them. But that's also very personal to me, and you may not feel that click with the pen and paper, you may feel that click with a computer, and hey, that's just as valid and witchy as the big old tome.
A meaningful reason for capturing your experiences, preferences, and ideas down in resources like these is that legacy established is, to call back to that point, and it builds over time. When you're engaged in this act of creation, outlining your rituals, documenting your incantations, or even describing your dreams or astral experiences, you're using your energy to manifest something that could potentially benefit much more than just your current and present self. As witches, it's always key to remember we live within a connected web, and that it's connected both to all in our current time as well as all along a river from the furthest past to the future before us. So while writing down that luck charm incantation may feel like a simple and singular task that's specific to you, this ongoing work of creation can both carry on traditions of the past and offer meaning and value to those beyond your time. With every new topic or moment you cover, you open a new door of learning and potential. Especially meaningful now in a time when attempts to rewrite or erase history are notably prominent and aggressive, you can make a point to document the people and ideas which have inspired you so far. Creating these records rescues things from the void of obscurity and ensures the possibility of sharing with others to spread what you've learned and discover more people and places from there. Now, I recognize that much of what a witch copies into their witch tome might be very personal, or perhaps the subject matter may cover things that they have no interest in sharing with others. Given this, it's worth noting that the most important beneficiary of your legacy here is simply your future self. On a fairly regular basis, I love opening my own books, my own witchy journal, which, you know, right now is the only book I have started from the beginning of my practice, to its very first entry, where I documented my emotions and thoughts after my first time joining a ritual within this dear grove. And I then inevitably read on a little bit into my first spells and rituals, and I love doing this because it reminds me how far I've come with my practice, and all the ways my perspective has been broadened by new things I've learned and experiences I've had, And as I read it, I'm also so grateful to my past self for making a point to write these things and experiences down. If ever I find I've fallen out of habit of journaling and documenting, rereading my origin story, so to speak, is the perfect way to remind myself that, yes, legacy is worth caring about. Even if nobody but yourself ever reads your words in the future, your future self is worth the effort, and your past self still has lessons to share, and your current self's knowledge is valid. These resources are in many ways about taking whatever we find magically meaningful and creating something with that meaning.
I love that you talk about this origin story. And yes, legacy for our future selves is very important. I also want to throw out there that if you do happen to have little witches in your family, this can be a really important legacy. While I don't have kids of my own, I am an auntie and I definitely have some witchy nibblings. And I do imagine that one day they will take interest in wanting to crack open my tome and see. But first and foremost, make it for yourself. First and foremost. And this has been particularly relevant for me because I have been working on my own compendium as my creative project. Mm-hmm. Jay's doing a creative craft journey and we've been along for the ride. And so I've been really updating my own. And as I've gotten to this point in my path where there's really two different books, right? There is the journey and then there is the reference book. And for me, I'm going to focus on the reference book and what I put in the reference book. Mm-hmm. Your journal is going to include like real journal entries, right? It's really going to start, become your origin story. It is all those emotions and those feelings. And then over time, as you start to solidify your rituals and your traditions, you'll just want a quick ways to reference those. And that's where that like compendium thing comes in. So I like to, start with really getting my head around what do I include. I am a Virgo. I am a type A personality. Give me a good list. So I start with a list and I use what I call spreads, which in like bullet journaling and journaling world is where you have two pages facing each other for a double wide visual display. And I start my spread somewhat zoomed out. So things like the pillars of witch, our main grove incantation, my astrological chart. So I do a spread for each of these. And then things like solar and lunar cycles and a spread for each element, the seasons and each festival. And this will include things like art. It'll include 3D media. Really getting into that, like I do say I do want that, like the auntie's tone yes. from Practical Magic. And I am making it.
Absolutely.
So I encourage you to make your own. It's been really fun to have this like multimedia, multi-textual experience. It's not without its hiccups and bumps, but it's been really fun and really a great learning. Then I include spreads for big rituals like birth, union, and death, followed by the focus on each path along my witch's web. Things like astronomy, protection, weather, trees, flowers, familiars, crystals, herbs, my color magic chart. This part of my compendium is designed to grow as I continue to learn and explore, but it becomes the list of all my findings. All while building this resource book to return to so that if I really just need to recap what weather magic really worked for me or what I did or, that quick little elixir that I really liked, where can I just quickly go to do that? And so that's kind of the goal here. For instance, so now that I've been doing tarot, I will have a better understanding of how to work more organically with the cards. I'm going to do a whole spread on tarot that just kind of reminds myself like, hey, if I need a quick refresher, it's going to have all that information for me to just be like, yep, okay, that's numbers 1 through 10. This is the face cards, maybe a quick breakdown of the major arcana, but that will be, a key part of my compendium. And then, of course, there's the spell section, and I'm actually planning to use pockets, like the old pockets in library books where you use the checkout card.
Every gal loves a pocket.
I love it. I love me some pockets. And so I'm hoping to store spell cards or zines. My hope is that it will let me get more spells in less space, while also making them something I can just, like, pull out and take to go do a thing and then, like, pop it back in. It's like cooking a little recipe. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, my witch's journal includes things like my shadow work, tarot spreads, meditative thoughts, and my thoughts on my journey. It might include how I feel after a ritual, but the compendium itself would contain the ritual outline and details. Now, no matter if you have a tactile or digital book, storage will be important. I know a lot of tech witches really love to do a good web page, but please just make sure you have your data backed up somewhere. As we have less and less digital control over our assets, it's important that something this sacred stays within reach. I recommend finding a little USB stick, even a cute one, to keep a backup on. As for the physical one, often witches like to keep these on their altars or in proximity. I think the key is just that it feels safe and respected, and that it is touched by only those you want to touch it, which means it's probably shouldn't be left out as a coffee table book. However you decide to accumulate your path, remember that your journey is worth documenting, and that we believe, at least, that part of our role as witch is to create legacy by passing down knowledge, wisdom, and story.
Previously on Atomic Witchcraft, I teed up my third subject of the year, moss and mushrooms. I talked about how, while I delighted in each of these types of organisms, I never incorporated them mindfully into my practice, so this was going to be a very broad 101 approach. My goal here was research and finding ways to deepen my love rather than coming away from this exploration with a spell like I previously had in my lunar cycles. I spent a good deal of my time reading, watching documentaries, and just generally letting myself be curious. I pondered on how each of these organisms have interesting cycles and ways of existing that can connect back to witchcraft. And all of this research and pondering is great, but I am a tactile human, so I wanted to get my hands in the dirt this round of exploration. As I had mentioned toward the end of my New Moon Brew episode, I had a few ideas on how to approach this hands-on need I had, including making a moss garden, establishing a mushroom bed in the corner of my yard, and trying to grow wine caps. Diving into some medicinal properties of each of these were just a few of the ideas that I sort of had swimming around in my brain. And don't get me wrong, these are all great ideas, but I had to sit with myself and be honest about the time, space, and energy I had as I was rounding out my lunar cycles. Many of these concepts would take quite a bit of time, like a bigger portion of the year amount of time.
That's a lot more time.
It's a lot more time, especially the bigger mushroom project. As I read into it, I was like, oh, this is like months and months.
I mean,
work.
We could get there.
But... No, we could get there.
I'm glad that you checked in with yourself, though. Yeah. That's like an important reminder. Like, folks, like... The craft is important, but it shouldn't be something that wears you down.
Absolutely. But I did want to still do something. So I pared it down to two projects to get that, like, hands-on itch scratch, if you know, without taking on, like, a multi-month or year-long project. So I decided to create a small moss terrarium for my altar and get a little DIY mushroom grow kit that's just meant to sit on your counter and be done there. Specifically, I knew that a local mushroom cultivar, Snow Valley, sold kits like this at the farmer's market, so with these in mind, I sailed forth. And wouldn't you know it, just as I was getting excited and raring to go, I was struck down. I found out mid-Lunar Revolution 2 that I had been exposed to COVID, and a couple of days later, I tested positive.
Yep.
It's once a year tradition for me at this point, and it's always a bummer. This unfortunately put me on the couch and off my schedule for about a good portion of a week, if not longer. Now, I could have pushed through and done what I was able to from home or around my yard, but I really wanted to prioritize rest. I took a lesson in patience and waiting from my moss and mushroom friends. Mosses tend to hunker down and wait for rain before flourishing. And fungi don't fruit until the right mixture of conditions comes along. So I chose to embrace the wait for it attitude and recover before continuing with my work. When I finally did have the energy again and was sans symptoms, I got to work on my first hands-on project, making my mini moss terrarium. A week or so prior to my illness, I had found a great little vase at the thrift store, just this sort of like short little round thing with a wide mouth. At the time, I thought it might just make like a cool project piece or like a little trinket holder, but it was perfect for a terrarium. I follow a terrarium maker on Instagram, shout out to Worcester Terrariums, and I've watched many a video of his, so I already had in my head how I was going to approach this. I thoroughly washed and dried my vessel, and then put a mix of small pebbles and sand in the bottom for some drainage, and topped that with healthy soil until it was about half full. Now it was time to collect my moss. I did this very carefully and very mindfully. I didn't go about ripping moss off of trees and logs because I didn't want to disturb these microenvironments. Instead, I scoured my yard and the small patch of woods behind our house for moss that had been blown down or washed off or that was loose and starting to peel away from a fallen branch. And I only collected very small amounts. After all, I didn't need much, and I wanted to remove as little as possible. Since we hadn't had any rain in a couple of days, I gave my moss a nice little soak and then very lovingly placed my moss in my terrarium. And as of this recording, it's doing well. I spray it with water once in a while, but it stays pretty moist on its own and still very green.
Is it growing?
Some of it is growing, yes. I've seen like longer little hairs peeking up, which is very fun.
I mean, it takes time.
It takes time. And now that I was no longer contagious, I could head to my local farmer's market and pick out my mushroom grow at home kit. I ended up getting a shiitake one, as the seller recommended it for a first-time grower like myself. And it was surprisingly easy. Like, just keep it covered, mist it a couple times a day, and keep watching for signs of growth. I got mushrooms way faster than I expected.
It was so cool.
It was so fun. And in little more than a week, I was like overflowing with this shiitake pile that I suddenly had.
It was amazing. We had more than we knew what to do with.
Oh, I knew what to do with them. But for my final lunar revolution, I mostly spent time taking care of my little projects and enjoying my shiitake mushrooms and doing some internalizing. I also ended up picking up two additional resource books kind of last minute from my library just to round things out a bit and do a little bit of additional poking around. Fungi by Lynn Boddy and Ali Ashby, and a guidebook called Mosses, Lichens, and Ferns of Northwest North America by Dale Vitt, Janet Marsh, and Robin Bovey. Fungi is less of an ID book, like All That the Rain Promises and more, and is more of a fact book. The moss one I picked up, hoping to kind of take it out in the field and do some IDing, but hit a couple of issues, which is, one, they do recommend using a magnifying tool like a microscope to be able to make out the details, and two, this book was published in 1988, which meant that the photos weren't as high quality as I was hoping. I would have gotten a more recent ID book, but honestly, there just aren't many out there. This was what my library had at the moment. Going through these lunar cycles has definitely given me a new depth to my appreciation of mosses and mushrooms. I definitely want to continue my new mindfulness around noticing these two and holding them a bit closer in my witchcraft practice, especially now that we are in the prime time of year for these two. I definitely, at some point, want to engage with those bigger ideas that I had, like the mushroom patch and moss garden. But for now, I'm happy just appreciating them along my path with this added layer of love and understanding.
All right. Well, I definitely have some questions about your journey. And I mean, let's start off science-based podcast. You know, what scientific things did you learn about mushrooms? Tell us.
Well, most of us know that mushrooms are great at breaking down and decaying plant matter. And this in turn becomes like a good food source for them. But did you know that there are an estimated 1.5 million species of fungi that are considered predators, at least to insects?
I actually don't want to like think about that.
I read this sentence in the fungi book and I was like, what? Excuse me? Perscuse? But yeah, many of these predator species attach themselves to insects while they are alive and feed off of them through the insect's death and decay, which is just bizarre to me. And this fact just drives home for me the concept that fungi are biologically closer to animals than to plants, which is also a wild fact. But I don't want to end that on a morbid note, so I also learned about how a mushroom's spore release pattern is so unique that it can create music.
What?
There was an experiment done in Edinburgh by Jan Sesnik and Patrick Hickey where they passed these spores through lasers, which were attached to a music program, and played mushroom music.
You know, we had a concert here in Seattle that recently was the mushroom concert, and I think it was something like this.
Oh, snap! I didn't know about this.
I'm very excited.
I am sitting here, a jaw agape. At this is the greatest thing.
Mushrooms are wild. The minute you start like scratching the surface of mushrooms, it just gets wilder and wilder.
Although, just to say it, thinking of mushrooms as predators did immediately have me thinking of like a little mushroom dude hiding in a brush, ready to jump out. But the whole planting on an insect walking around and slowly turning to their death and decay is far more metal.
Yeah, 100% more metal.
Yes. What scientific things did you learn about moss? Now I can't wait to hear what you learned about moss.
Okay, it's not nearly as like shocking or morbid, but I did learn how moss doesn't like die back in the dry seasons and then later sort of resprout like annuals do, you know, yeah. When they die back and then come back in the sun. but rather they have a self-preservation method where they sort of shrink and curl up and dry down to keep what remaining moisture they have at its base so it doesn't evaporate into the air. And that sort of keeps it in this stasis of like self-preservation, but then they can remain dormant like this for a while, like a long time. And then the moment it starts raining again, they spring back up and like drink it all up, which is why when you go like walking through the forest on a hot summer day, and then if it rains next day, you go walking through it the next day, suddenly it's green.
Yeah. So my yard here has like a stone wall situation and it grows moss. It's my favorite thing. And during the summer, it dries up. I had some folks move in and they started scraping it off. And I was like, no, 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 no. And they're like, but it's just dirt. And I was like, no, no. When it rains, it will be beautiful. Just give it time.
Yeah, just give it time. Yeah. We used to, in our previous house, we had this little line of moss growing in a windowsill in our living room window. And we're always just like, we should take it out. I was like, no, but it turns pretty. So it would be brown throughout the summer. And then as soon as the moisture started coming through the screen, it would like all spurt up. And I'm just like, how are you growing and thriving in our windowsill? Like this little crack in our windowsill.
To be fair, I don't think those windows were very well insulated.
That's fair.
And I think that the moss helped.
You know, moss at one time was used for insulation.
Yeah.
In various things like clothing and houses. It's possible.
Makes sense to me.
But another thing I learned was I learned how slowly some mosses spread and grow, like really slowly, and how long mosses can live. Moss carpets living on trees in old growth forests, like think the Hall of Mosses up here in the Olympic National Park, can be hundreds of years old, like these single organisms, and take a long time to spread and add to their numbers. So when people come along and like tear chunks of moss off of these trees and these environments, they're destroying hundreds of years of history and legacy, and not to mention the thriving microenvironment. But yeah, I think because moss seems to spring up quickly, I always thought, oh, it's like a quick growing thing. But no, these things
it's just
take
dormant.
A long
yeah.
time. It's just dormant for so long. So that's wild. And that's where that sort of like, oh, like, no, you gotta be patient lesson came in when I was sick and had to just rest and lay dormant.
It's a great reminder, too, of like things in nature, their age are not correlated to their size. You know, we think of like great trees. Old trees are huge and kind of, or at least maybe they're not massively tall, but they're like gnarled and have a million branches and all these things. But that even the smallest of things could absolutely be the longest, you know, persisting.
I mean, termites, friends, they're going to outlive us all. Now, I know for this, you know, topic, we kind of put moss and mushroom together. But now that you've explored them, do you kind of feel like they should be separate? I know a lot of book titles lump them together. That was kind of clear in some of the references you made. But, you know, do you think that they have enough relationship with each other, with decay, that they should be lumped together? Or is it really like two separate practices?
Yeah. I mean, like as a really, really basic surface level interest, approaching both at the same time is okay. But honestly, the second I started diving in, both are such complex organisms with vast histories and relationships to humans that approaching each individually is really best. And while they do have some similarities, like shared environments, need for healthy soils, specific weather, how mushrooms will decay so that moss can flourish, there's so much nuance and such vast differences that exploring both at the same time, I just felt like I was doing a little bit of a disservice to each of them eventually, you know? I could honestly spend 3 lunar cycles just exploring a handful of culinary mushrooms or learning about foraging a certain species. It doesn't even have to be the subject as an overall whole. I could just really hone in, but you know, from here on out, my recommendation is to honestly approach mosses and mushrooms individually.
Yeah, makes sense. So when you think about moss and mushrooms in a more esoteric, what do they have to teach us sort of way, what would you offer at this stage of your journey now that you've learned so much of the basics here and some of the details? Are there lessons you're already trying to like apply to your own life? I mean, other than the sort of wait for it mentality when you need to, but
I think the wait for it mentality and the sort of the self-preservation lesson there was definitely that sort of big apply to my own life kind of thing I took away. I definitely want to keep that in mind and in my like heart as I move forward. These are questions I've been pondering on throughout my journey, and I didn't have any major like aha moments, but just some thoughts I've been playing around with, and definitely thoughts I'll continue to chew on as I go throughout the year. But the biggest one is how, like, fungi are connected to this bigger web of mycelium that we necessarily can't see. And they can even use it to communicate with each other and organisms. And this, to me, feels very akin to how we talk about witch being a weaver to the web and being connected to everything that is around us. And while this feels like a more esoteric kind of woo-woo aspect of witchcraft, connecting it back to the mycelium in this way really does ground it in the physical and grounds it in that science. And for me, in my green path, especially since this is how I visualize my energetic connections with the earth, literally as tendrils or filaments going out.
Yeah, me too.
I also saw these like cycles of decay and growth in my explanation that I found really interesting. Mushrooms take matter that has died, breaks it down, and turns it into nutritional soil, which then provides a good base for moss to thrive. There's this sort of give and take and energy exchange, and to me this is kind of the micro example of the bigger cycles of life, death, birth that has a really interesting correlation to me. I want to do more pondering around the roles of each of these, but especially mushrooms that play in the death aspect of a green path. But I think that's maybe a little bit of a further stage or just like continual just pondering on it, especially as we're coming into the dark half of the year and it's going to be a lot of more turning inward work. So something I'm really curious about. But I think the biggest takeaway, yeah, for me, my personal life was the being patient, resting, and the wait for it. If nature does it, I can too.
Yes, you can. Well, since you did get to get your hands a little dirty, would you recommend the mushroom growing activity to folks? Curious, you know, how difficult it was and like any nitty-gritty details or tips or tricks?
I would absolutely recommend it. It was such a delight watching my little mushrooms spring out.
I was delighted as somebody that wasn't even there, just seeing the pictures.
I mean, they would just like feel like they got bigger by the hour. And Jay can tell you I was like giddy checking my mushrooms every day.
Equally giddy.
Yes.
Equally, like rarely do you get to see such like a natural thing grow at that pace. That's, you know, like it's like the old like watching grass grow, but like no, watching mushrooms grow, you can actually appreciate it, like
you
in real
track
time.
Their growth by the hour.
It was incredible. I wanted to start marking their heights on the wall. You know, like it was. I was so proud of them.
I definitely recommend starting with a shiitake or similar easy kit like I did. It is one of the easiest ones, and they are really tasty. The kit was a little solid block of this like spongy compost material that had been inoculated with the mushrooms. And yeah, all I did was I took it out of its bag, rinsed it off, and placed it on my counter on a cookie rack just to get some ventilation beneath it. And I covered that with a plastic bag just to keep the moisture in, sprayed it down with distilled water twice a day, and then I had mushrooms in a week. So it was very hands-off, very easy, but like just like peeking under the plastic every day and just be like, oh, they're bigger. Oh, they're bigger now. It was just so fun and just so delightful. Like delightful is truly the word that this experience was. And yeah, the instructions and little illustrations that came with the kit also made it super easy to understand what to look for when they were ripe. And, you know, I should be able to soak my block again and begin the process all over to get another flush of shiitakes. Hopefully I haven't let it dry too long, but I think that they'll
bounce
back.
Wait, you mean it doesn't have to be injected again, inoculated
again?
Nope,
you can just like, they'll just keep coming back as long as it's got some boom to it. Some mycelium boom. I think the kit said that they can do 2 or 3 additional flushes more. But whatever shape your exploration into moss and mushrooms takes, I hope you do take that time to appreciate these lesser known organisms of the earth. I would like to offer you all a walking meditation to help be more mindful of the smaller aspects of the natural world and to be able to notice and appreciate mosses and mushrooms all the more. This meditation is meant to be done while taking a walk through nature rather than a sit down and close your eyes type. Nature here could be a city park, a patch of woods, a state park, portion of your property, or if you have an especially wild section of your neighborhood. Walking could be movement of any kind. So while you might hear the term walking throughout, that may mean rolling or however else you move about the world. And if movement isn't an option, find yourself a window. Even if you don't spot mosses and mushrooms, nature has a lot to offer. For this, we want to be as in the moment as possible, so no checking your phone, listening to music. And hey, I would even recommend listening to this before heading out rather than during so that you can tune into the sounds around you. So when you're ready to, bundle up as much as you need and head out to where you'll be taking your walk. Standing at the beginning of your path, take a moment and pause. Inhale and exhale. Do this a few times, taking nice deep breaths and letting them go. While doing so, release anything that might be tugging on you and pulling you out of the present moment. Put aside the workday, the family stress, the bad news, and be here now. Allow yourself to lean into the natural rhythms around you, rather than those we have created as people. Take one more deep inhale and exhale, and begin your walk. This isn't a race. We aren't walking with the goal of exercise necessarily. We're walking for the sake of walking, to be outside in this moment in time. Take it slow, allowing yourself to drink in your surroundings. The trees, the plants, the bugs, the birds, the clouds. Notice it all. While walking, keep your breath slow and steady. Stay grounded as you move. After a little while, if you haven't already, turn your eyes to the ground, to the surfaces of logs, to the trunks of trees, to rock faces. We're looking for our friends that I have chatted about this episode, mosses and mushrooms. If you live somewhere like the Pacific Northwest, there's a good chance they'll be very easy to find. But if you don't, look specifically in areas rich with leafy decay or areas that are shaded or close to water sources. Pause along your walk as you come across mosses and mushrooms that pull your interest. Crouch down, observe, and note. How many species can you find? How many different shades of green? Are there different textures, different sizes? What are the smallest mushrooms you can spot? Or how about the biggest? Are there other plants like ferns growing in the moss? How about insects, either consuming these resources or making them their home? Spend as much or as little time with your discoveries as you feel is correct. Offer appreciation to these organisms as you leave them. Continue your walking. You're stopping to observe and appreciate. You're breathing in and out. This journey can be as long or as short as you need. Just stay mindfully in the present up until the moment you are finished. When you return to your home or car, take note of any interesting findings, feelings, or experiences you had along the way. That wraps up our full moon focus episode on moss and mushrooms. We hope you'll join us again just before the new moon for our next New Moon Brew, featuring Jay's fourth and final subject, elixirs. We'll also bring you more from Charting the Celestial, Resistance Radio, and chat about the impending seasonal shift as winter is indeed coming.
In the meantime, join us on Patreon for podcast updates and team news. It's free to join, and there are lots of resources to explore.
And if you're interested in community, you can always find us in our Discord server. Links to join are in the episode info.
And until next time,
keep your world witchy.